All right, we're halfway through the NFL season now, and hey, we had a change in leadership in Washington. You know, a lot of crazy things going down this week in the NFL season, and here to help us sift through it all are a bunch of guys whose teams didn't win a single game this week. Eric Smith, Mike Miklius, and myself. Obviously, you know, hey, we're 0-2. Eric, your team didn't lose today. How you feeling?
On top of the world. I'm the only not sad one out of this group today. So got to put my feet up, watch some football, and there were some really good games. The late games really came down to the wire. So I enjoyed it, and I didn't have to be stressed out all afternoon.
Well, I was very stressed out all afternoon as one of those games you're talking about was the Cowboys game. You know, I really thought coming in this week that there was nothing that they could do to hurt me anymore. And I was wrong. Get a lead and hold it for most of the game was what they needed to do to get me to believe that maybe they'd get a win. So that was thanks, Cowboys. You know, great. And hey, we got Mike with us. Mike, are you as sad as I am about the way your Bears played today?
I'm a little more apathetic. They were down 10-0 at halftime. I watch with my dad every week. And at halftime, he went to go take a nap and came back after the game finished and said, I guess I didn't miss very much this week.
Well, the Bears took a nap in the first half, your dad in the second half. So, you know, it was just a good transition there. But you know what? I hope you guys didn't sleep through. Obviously, our live stream that we do every week at noon Eastern, they go through, you know, all the games. That's led by Aaron Rader and Matt Dean. They answer all the last minute start or sit questions. And tomorrow, our What We Saw article will be out on our website, QBList.com. You can also find it on our Twitter at the QB List. And that's where we go over all the games, all the analysis, including Sunday Night Football, which is happening right now. Antonio Brown is on the field. So, you know, I guess that's happening. That's a thing that's happening this season. But, you know, a lot of things happened this week. And here, you know, Eric, who's one of your winners this week?
Yeah, so my winner this week is DJ Chark. It looked at one point during the season like he was kind of fading out of the offense. They were getting the ball a lot to Keelan Cole and a few other options. And, you know, Gardner Minshew was really spreading it around. And all of a sudden this week, he's got to deal with the QB change. Jake Luton takes over. And it was really encouraging overall for the Jaguars offense and for Chark. Luton looked pretty good, and Chark had 12 targets, 7 receptions, 146 yards, and a touchdown. He had a big play. So just after last week where he only had one catch, he was kind of worried that Chark was just going to fade away for the rest of the season. So big game. He's back on the map. If you got him, you can stop panicking for a little while, and we'll see if Luton looks this good every week. But it was a bad Texans defense, but first sign is good from him. So we'll see next week how he looks.
And Mike, who is your winner of the week?
I'm happy and excited to say that my winner of the week was Curtis Samuel. I was absent last week, and unfortunately, I missed getting to talk about a 2-touchdown Curtis Samuel game. But fortunately, he was kind enough to come back again with 100 yards this week, another touchdown. And I think the big news here is that he's starting to earn himself more of a role. I wouldn't say he's become the top threat by any means, but he's earning himself more of a spot, and the team is clearly looking to use him in scoring situations. He creates a mismatch. He played running back in college as well as wide receiver. So he's my winner for this week.
No, I mean, with Christian McCaffrey back and healthy, I think he's obviously the top weapon there in Carolina. But Robbie Anderson led the team in targets with 13. Samuel, second among the wide receivers with 9 targets. And, you know, DJ Moore all the way down there at 3. Although I think I might have jumped the gun a little bit there. Mike, who's your loser this week?
Well, you did jump it a little bit. My loser is DJ Moore. And he's not somebody I'm, like, jumping off the cliff on. But he looked like the fourth best weapon on the team this week. He was obviously behind McCaffrey. He was still behind Robbie Anderson for me. And Curtis Samuel looked more impressive today for me. He's someone I'm worried about carving out enough targets for himself. Back last year when he was the number one wide receiver and the clear one at that, it was pretty easy. But now Robbie Anderson seems like the better bet there. And it's just going to be, is there enough to go around for more?
I think for me, it's been pretty clear over the past few weeks that Robbie Anderson is the guy that Bridgewater looks at the most. That's the one he wants to go to the most. And how involved Moore is really is more, you know, due to how the other team plays them. And in weeks where they focus more on Anderson, they'll go to Moore more often. And now you've got McCaffrey, you got Samuel who's getting more involved. So I'm really concerned that, you know, DJ Moore isn't going to soak up a ton of volume because, you know, I don't know how often they're going to game plan for everyone but DJ Moore. That's not something you would expect from opposing defenses.
Yeah, I would say on the bright side for Panthers fans, this is going to be, if they can keep this together, this is going to be a super exciting offense to watch when you bring in whatever new talent you have next year. And as you give the coaches more time to set up the offense they want here, Samuel, McCaffrey, Anderson, Moore, that's quite a combo of guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, who's your loser this week?
Yeah, so this one, I just went with the whole Chargers backfield. I don't know what to make of them. Justin Jackson, you know, he came in, he apparently got hurt on the first play, missed some time. He was back, but didn't record a stat. All of a sudden, they like Kalen Ballage more than Joshua Kelly, who I know Kelly's had some rookie mistakes. He's had a fumble here or there, hasn't looked great. But all of a sudden, Kalen Ballage, who most people didn't even know was on the Chargers, is getting kind of RB1 snaps. So I don't think we can trust anyone in this backfield until Austin Eckler comes back, and it seems like he's still a little bit away. So it's hard to get a lot of news on Eckler right now, but it doesn't look like next week. So this was a backfield I thought we were going to get a lot of fantasy usage out of this year. And as Herbert has really taken over and turned it into a passing offense, we've kind of lost the whole backfield. And then Anthony Lynn, we can't trust him on who's going to get the usage. So I think I'm staying away from him, lowering them all in my rankings. And Joshua Kelly, this seemed to be his big chance and he didn't take it.
Well, I mean, this is 2 weeks in a row that someone no one expected to get a carry in L.A. got carries ahead of Joshua Kelly after Tremaine Pope was the number two guy last week. He didn't play today. He was in the concussion protocol. And then Kalen Ballage, who last I heard was on the Jets. I had no idea that he was here with the Chargers. I mean, 15 carries, 69 yards and a touchdown. If Justin Jackson is healthy next week, are we back to Justin Jackson? Are we with Kalen Ballage? Should we be going to pick up Kalen Ballage right now? What I mean, I know you say they're a loser, but Eric, a lot of people out there need something at running back. Are we doing anything about these guys?
Not a ton. I mean, Ballage didn't look bad. So, I mean, you can add him because he's getting some work. But I mean, like you said, Tremaine Pope, he had a concussion, so he may be coming back, and he already ate into Jackson's work last week. So it's not like Jackson is just the lead back no matter what when he returns. So now I think it's going to be a mess with 3 to 4 people getting used here, and we're just waiting on Eckler at this point. But you can add Ballage for sure, but I think he's an emergency flex play. But we do have lots of bye weeks coming up, so you may need him.
I'm just going to say what I've been saying about Joshua Kelly for weeks now, ever since he flopped against the Jaguars. You can drop Joshua Kelly. Yep. 2 weeks in a row now of being the clearly the third guy in LA. I mean, he was number two today, but that was because Jackson was hurt. So I just don't really think there's any reason to continue to hold on to him in redraft leagues. Let's talk about some injury news. I alluded to this at the top of the show. You know, there's a new man in charge in Washington with the football team. And that is Alex Smith now at quarterback, because Kyle Allen suffered a pretty horrific leg injury. I would not recommend going to watch this video like I went out of my way to do. It is pretty gnarly. Luckily, the initial diagnosis is that it's just a dislocated left ankle and a small fracture, which it sounds to be still season ending from what they're saying. But it's not likely to be anywhere near as bad as the injury Alex Smith suffered on the same field a few years ago, when he needed, I think, 17 surgeries and 2 years of rehab to come back. It's not going to be like that. Speaking of Alex Smith, you know, he is the starting quarterback now in Washington. He took over today. It seems like they want nothing to do with Dwayne Haskins right now for whatever reason. And so it seems like Smith is going to be starting next week. What did you guys see from Alex Smith today, and what impact does that have on the Washington football team offense?
Yeah, it's not pretty, but it wasn't pretty with Kyle Allen already. So I don't know. I mean, we know that, you know, Alex Smith is going to check down a lot. They are saying they're going to promote Haskins to backup, but it kind of seemed like they didn't even want him on the field. So I guess he's one hit closer to getting back on the field, but I don't think it changes much. Smith's going to check it down a lot. McLaurin seems to be fine with everyone, and there's just nobody after that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Looks like McLaurin's going to eat with whoever's there for the most part. I don't think the offense is going to get much worse, and the matchups aren't too bad coming up with the Lions, the Bengals, and the Cowboys. So I think Smith will be fine. He's not going to suddenly make a bunch of guys relevant, but McLaurin should be fine. Gibson should be okay if you're in need of running back, and that's still about it.
Well, actually, I think this makes JD McKissick really interesting. Smith wanted to check down to McKissick so much that he actually threw an interception throwing to McKissick, who had fallen down on the play. And Smith was just so desperate to check it down to him that you know, he still threw it to him. I don't think he knew because it could fall on down, but it was still pretty wild to see that. And then Blake Martinez intercepted it for the Giants. But McKissick had 14 targets today, 9 receptions, 65 yards. I think he becomes really interesting as like a low-end RB2, you know, like desperate RB2 type situation. But McLaurin, you know, he's going to be relevant no matter who the quarterback is. He had 7 receptions for 115 yards today and a touchdown, and most of that came with Smith and not Allen. So I don't think you can really change how you feel about anyone else besides McKissick, but I think, honestly, if McKissick's available, I'm going to pick him up in every league just in case. I have, you know, injuries, COVID, you know, players, buys, all that stuff. And obviously, hopefully, nothing but the best for Kyle Allen moving forward.
Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow for Gibson fans because his one thing was supposed to be the passing game. And you just have some guy off the street basically stealing all that work from him.
Right. Preston Williams was carted to the locker room. It seems like the x-rays are negative and it sounds like it's a foot sprain. But the initial, you know, concern from Miami was that it could be season ending. So definitely keep an eye on that. You know, we were in the same situation, I think, last week with George Kittle, where the initial x-rays were negative, and then all of a sudden he's out 8 weeks. So just keep an eye on Preston Williams. He probably wasn't rostered in many leagues, but he was looking pretty interesting with Tua. They seem to have developed a bit of a chemistry, so hopefully Williams can return. Noah Fant injured his ankle in the first quarter. He did return to the game, but he only had 2 receptions for 13 yards after that. We were all really excited for Noah Fant coming into this week against that terrible Falcons secondary. But he, you know, obviously wasn't able to take control. But he should be able to play moving forward and definitely monitor his status throughout the week. David Johnson left the game in the first quarter, was ruled out with a concussion. So they brought in their other D Johnson, Duke Johnson. So, you know, David's still going to be the starter. Just depends on if he can clear concussion protocol in time. Laviska Shenault left the game with a hamstring injury. He limped off on the second drive of the game. I wonder if Shenault not being in there was allowed Chark to, you know, really soak up even more volume. Probably not, but, you know, Shenault is one of the better wide receivers there in Jacksonville, so there's a chance there for that. For these players, Fant, Johnson, Shenault, you know, are you guys expecting to see them back by next week? And you know, does this concern, you know, change your opinion on them in terms of value for any of them?
Yeah, I was really looking forward to Fant this week. I thought it was a nice breakout spot, and I think this just delayed it. Hopefully it's still coming, though. He did have a 32-yarder on the opening drive before he got hurt, so it was looking good for Fant, so I'm still feeling good about him. Preston Williams, he was getting more work a little bit because Patrick Peterson was on Devontae Parker, so we'll see. But definitely with Tua encouraging performance today, it's definitely nice for Williams, so we'll see how long he's out. And then Johnson, it's just brutal because this was his blow up spot against the Jaguars and you lose him right away. So anyone who had David Johnson probably had this penciled in on their in their lineup for a few weeks out and they got nothing out of it.
Yeah, my takeaways on these injuries, I think Fant and Shenault are going to take some time to get back. They're young guys, they're talented guys, and both teams are dead end teams. So there's no reason to rush them back onto the field again. David Johnson, the thing I think here, I think everyone's going to rush to grab Duke and say like, oh, maybe Duke's going to get the start. You know, maybe he's out a week and he gets full carries, but we just never see that happen. So I would caution that optimism that's going to pop up in a few days if David Johnson isn't practicing.
All right. Let's talk about the top performers of the week. We had some really exciting performances at, you know, through the air, not as much on the ground. I mean, we still had, you know, 2 incredible performances, but definitely not what we saw last week where a lot of the performance was on the ground and not as much through the air. But the top performers today, Kyler Murray, number one quarterback of the day. He scored almost 38 points as he threw for 3 touchdowns and ran for another. Josh Allen, welcome back to the list. We haven't seen his name in a few weeks as the Buffalo passing attack has not been as exciting as it was at the beginning of the year. But today, 415 yards in the air, 3 touchdowns, you know, scored 36 fantasy points, also ran one in. So a big day for Josh Allen. And then Patrick Mahomes, you know, I mean, kind of expect to see his name quite a bit, but 372 yards passing, 4 touchdowns through the air. I don't really think there's anything more to say on these guys. This is 3 of the best quarterbacks in fantasy, and they're doing what they always do.
They brought up on the broadcast, Kyler Murray currently looks like the best rushing quarterback in the league. It's kind of wild. He is just breaking off large chunks every time he takes off. So, yeah, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, every time I watch him run, I worry he's going to take one big hit and he's going to be broken like RG3. But it's fun while we have it.
Well, I mean, he knows how to slide. He played baseball, so hopefully he continues to do that and keep himself out of harm's way. Running back, Dalvin Cook. You know, last week, Eric had Dalvin Cook as one of his winners. He had a big week. And I think by fantasy points scored, I think he was better last week, but he definitely didn't break 200 yards rushing like he did this week. 206 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. You know, a far cry from the 4 touchdowns Cook scored last week. But hey, you're still going to take a 2-touchdown game and 39 fantasy points. And welcome back, Christian McCaffrey. It's nice to see you again. Everyone who drafted you first overall has definitely missed you. And the 37 points you scored today, 10 receptions, 82 yards, 2 total touchdowns. You know, this is going to be really exciting to see kind of who, you know, remains the top fantasy running back week in and week out, because you've got Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook all healthy. It's going to be really exciting to see how that plays out. And then number three, J.D. McKissic, 17 points. This is a PBR only. He got 9 of his points on those receptions, but it just kind of shows what kind of a weird day it was where, you know, Cook and McCaffrey each had over 37 points and McKissic had 17. So, you know, is this a sign of things to come at the running back position? You know, we're just really not going to see a lot of big performances from, I mean, there's guys that always have the opportunities like Josh Jacobs and Todd Gurley. But you know, just no one really came through today.
I mean, it definitely shows, you know, pass catching how important it is with CMC and McKissic showing up on that list. I mean, kind of wild to see McCaffrey catching 10 of 10 passes his first game back. So he looked great. Good to see him back, but I mean, Dalvin Cook is just, he has as big of upside as anyone in the league when he's healthy. So this is 2 straight weeks, and it makes that week you missed him definitely pay off. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely around the league, there are less offenses we feel great about. There have been more injuries to the running back position. So yeah, I just, there's a few and far between elite running backs this year.
All right. And that wide receiver top performance today, Tyreek Hill, 33 points. I mean, when you score 2 touchdowns and have over 100 yards receiving, you're going to be on this list. DJ Chark, 27 points. We talked about him at the top of the show. He was Eric's winner of the week. And then Curtis Samuel, 9 receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown. So, you know, 2 of our winners here on this list. Mike, very happy to see Curtis Samuel up here. Are we going to see him again, Mike?
Oh, yeah, we'll see him bounce back. It won't be every week. Don't get it in your head that he's going to be 100 yards a week, but he will have some big games.
Do we need to be picking up Curtis Samuel?
Ooh, I would. Yeah, I think he's shown enough where it's at least worth having him on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. They've been making a point to use him in the red zone, so they definitely like getting the ball in his hands when it matters.
Who would you put as your number one waiver claim? Curtis Samuel or Richie James? Both of them under 30% rostered. Richie James had 33 points on Thursday.
This may be the homer in me, but I'm going to say an easy Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, I just think he's more talented, so I'd go Samuel.
Right. Well, and when the 49ers have their wide receivers back and healthy, Richie James may not be on the field still. And then at tight end, Travis Kelce, number one tight end of the day. I mean, 26 points in PPR leagues. Enough said there. Jimmy Graham, you know, he's always liable to score a touchdown. He's one of the most targeted tight ends in the red zone and end zone. So, you know, when he scores a touchdown, he has a good game. And then Eric, I know you're happy about this. You want to say the number three tight end on the day?
Number three tight end is Evan Engram with 15 whopping PPR points. Just as I say every week, he is a startable tight end.
Yeah, I mean, when you get 10 targets and, you know, you can turn them into 5 receptions for 48 yards and a touchdown, that's, you know, that's good. That's good production there. And that's the thing, is he's always going to get the targets. I don't think we've ever doubted his involvement in the offense. He needs to score a touchdown or you know, get some yards to be relevant. And he did that today.
Yeah, it was his first touchdown of the year, though, and he hasn't cracked, 70 yards in a game all year. So I'm exaggerating, but the state of the tight end position, if he's going to get 9 to 10 targets, we got to play him.
Yeah, completely agreed. All right, let's talk some regular football for once. We always talk fantasy football. We'll talk actual football, and let's talk about midseason awards. We're going to do our midseason awards as if the season ended today. Who are winning these awards? We're not going to project out for the rest of the season. So let's start with MVP. This is always the exciting one. Eric, who do you have as your MVP to this point in the season?
So I have Russell Wilson as my MVP. I gave him the nod over Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes has Andy Reid and Russell Wilson doesn't. And I think weapons-wise, it's not that big of a difference between the two. They both have some talented players. So Russell Wilson, he's just been incredible. With that bad defense, he's earned every penny this year.
Are we saying Pete Carroll is like that much worse of a coach than Andy Reid that makes the difference for you?
well, play caller. Andy Reid, I just have a ton of respect for him as a play caller. So we've seen what he did with Alex Smith a few years. So it's just kind of, I think if you put someone other than Russell Wilson in Seattle right now, it'd be a disaster.
All right, Mike, who is your MVP so far this year?
I had the same answer, Russell Wilson. I think it's two things. He's having a really great season. And also, I think he's due. Yeah, he had a season, in, I think it was 2 years ago, where his team had 38 touchdowns and he accounted for 37 of them. And I think he was kind of overlooked. And I think this year it's his to lose because he's never gotten a vote. And everyone kind of knows that's a little ridiculous.
See, that's the problem, though, is that you guys think he's due. What you're missing is that's actually the first rule of when you're doing your MVP ballots is you can't put Russell Wilson on your ballot. The writers have known this for years. Obviously, you guys aren't privy to that. You know, that's okay. You don't have the connections that I do with, you know, the fantasies or the NFL sports writers out there. So they've let me in on the rule. So I know I can't say Russell Wilson. So I'm going to say Patrick Mahomes. I think Mahomes, what he's done in Kansas City, I mean, it, you know, obviously it's not like it's a surprise, but it's not, you know, what Russell Wilson's done isn't really a surprise either. I just think Mahomes has been slightly better this year. And, you know, the Seahawks have stumbled a bit for me the way they played the past few weeks. So I'm going to go with Mahomes. You know, MVP, it's all about winning games. And the Chiefs have been doing that. And, you know, call it recency bias, but the Seahawks losing today didn't sit right. Didn't sit right with me. Let's go to Offensive Player of the Year, or as we like to call it here, the non-quarterback MVP award, because that's pretty much what it actually is. Mike, let's start with you. Who is your Offensive Player of the Year / non-QB MVP?
My Offensive Player of the Year non-quarterback is Alvin Kamara. He's really held together a team that's kind of fallen apart by injuries. They lost Michael Thomas. They lost Emmanuel Sanders. Basically, the weapons they were expecting to hold together the passing game. And in their absence, he's had 55 receptions through seven games. The running numbers have been a bit low, but he's been very impressive with what he's done. So he's my guy this year.
All right, Eric, who's your Offensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, I struggled with this one a little bit because there weren't any running backs that we saw, you know, Mike Davis replace Christian McCaffrey and kind of hold things together. So there weren't any running backs I really wanted to go for. So I'm going to get a little weird with this one and go with Davante Adams. I know he's missed a lot of time, but he is just the central point of that offense. He has multiple, let's see, two touchdown games and a three touchdown game. He's only played six games. He's just burning people up in the secondary, especially the Vikings. So that helps. That's a division opponent. But I just think Adams has been the most impressive non-quarterback I've seen this year on offense. He's just a great route runner, and him and Aaron Rodgers are just always on the same page.
Well, Davante Adams is fifth in the league in receiving yards and first in receiving touchdowns. And as you mentioned, he's done that with missing time. So, I mean, Adams is where my mind first went, to be honest, because I think when he's been there and been healthy, there hasn't been a better player, you know, on the field. So everyone knows where Aaron Rodgers is throwing it to, and they still can't stop him. So I completely agree with that. I think that's fantastic. But I have to go with Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook, I mean, look, record doesn't matter when you're talking Offensive Player of the Year. Okay, the Vikings are terrible, but it's not Dalvin Cook's fault. He is second in the league in rushing yards, and that's heading into today where, you know, his 206-yard performance is going to put him above, you know, Derrick Henry, who is currently ahead of him. In rushing touchdowns, Dalvin Cook leads the league. Yards from scrimmage, Dalvin Cook is third, and he did all this while missing a game. He did miss 1 week. He did also come out early in the week that he got injured. So I really have to say it's Dalvin Cook. And I mean, he's been literally the Vikings offense. Like you, Mike, you mentioned Kamara stepped up in the absence of weapons there in New Orleans. Like they don't even have any weapons to begin with in Minnesota. And Dalvin Cook's doing the whole thing. Eric, last week we talked 48 plays from scrimmage, 33 of them went to Dalvin Cook. It's got to be Cook.
No, I mean, he's on another level. He's kind of a mix of the workhorse type and the passing game type. So if they actually threw the ball, he'd have some nice passing game numbers too. So I'm on board there, though. Yeah, he's a special player, and he's in a groove right now for sure.
My plan is just to wait for both of your guys to get hurt, and then mine will win by default.
It's probably a good bet.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's go to the other side of the ball, which we don't talk about a whole lot on this show. It's not really super fantasy relevant, but we're going to talk about defensive players. Eric, I'll throw it to you first. Who is your defensive player of the year?
Yeah, this is Aaron Donald. It's hard to not pick him. I mean, he gets defensive end or linebacker sack totals from the interior, which is just super valuable. And I mean, really, that Rams team, if they couldn't lean on their defense at times this year, they'd be struggling. The offense hasn't been that impressive. So I like Donald, and it's just, what would this be, like third year in a row? I can't even count him at this point.
Yeah, he's been one of the best defensive players in the league for a long time now. So, if Aaron Donald was to win it, I mean, I don't think it would surprise anyone. Mike, who's your defensive player of the year?
So I love Aaron Donald as a pick. I went with Myles Garrett, though. Myles Garrett's currently tied for the lead with sacks. He leads the league in forced fumbles. He's got a lot of QB hits. He's been an absolute force on that Cleveland defense. He's battling through a knee injury right now, but he's expected to play through it. I think there's a few guys you could go with here. Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett both, I'd be happy to see either as defensive player of the year.
So I'm actually going to go a slightly different route. And for me, I think I took team performance into this a little bit, which I know, they don't typically do with defensive player of the year. But Eric, you mentioned with the Rams, without their defense, where would they be? They've definitely needed it. I think in a lot of ways, that's similar for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've had some, games where they really had no business winning it, but their defense has been so good this year. It's led them to this 8-0 record. So I went with TJ Watt. Watt has led the league in tackles for loss. He's had 7 sacks on the year, so he's up there as well. He's got 21 QB hits. I think Watt is a huge part of what they're doing in Pittsburgh. It really pains me to see how well he's doing, because we could have drafted him, and instead we drafted Taco Charlton, so that's cool. Would have been nice to have TJ Watt, let me tell you. And TJ is going to continue the family tradition of being an absolute menace to quarterbacks and winning defensive player of the year. So I think TJ Watt is definitely deserving of winning the award this year. Let's talk about rookies. Eric, I'm going to start with you, because I know you love to talk about rookies. So which rookie running back is winning rookie of the year for you?
Nope, I'm going Joe Burrow. You guys can't talk me out of this one. I'm been really impressed with how he played, and I think Herbert has probably put up better numbers, but I think Burrow's got less to work with here. The line is killing him every week. It's getting a little better, but I mean, they're starting people off the street most weeks at offensive line, and he's really just, he feels like the team's offensive play caller. He's just running this offense, and the degree of difficulty is hard to, outside of a couple good receivers, he's got not much there. So I'm loving what I've seen out of Burrow. Bit of a homer pick here. I think most would probably go with Herbert, but the future is bright, and we'll see how many wins they pull out. But the Bengals and Chargers are both battling for another high draft pick. So I don't think you can dock Burrow too much there either.
So which of them are going to draft Trevor Lawrence? Burrow's a great pick. I think Burrow has looked fantastic. If we're going by eye test alone, I think Burrow would easily be the rookie of the year. But we're not. So I have to say it's Justin Herbert. The performance has absolutely been fantastic. He's been one of the best quarterbacks. Obviously slightly biased by what we do, but Herbert's been one of the best fantasy quarterbacks this year. He's been absolutely fantastic. And I also just, it sticks to me, Burrow came into, he came into the season knowing he was going to be the starter. Herbert came in wanting to be the starter, hoping to be the starter, but he was second on the depth chart behind Tyrod Taylor. He got thrown in there like right before game time in week 2 and has been fantastic since. So I would got to go with Justin Herbert. I think Burrow could easily win this award by season's end, but I like Herbert. Mike, what about you? Are you going to break this tie?
Well, I like that you went with a Justin, but you picked the wrong Justin. It's going to be Justin Jefferson, in my opinion. So I think wide receiver rookies have the hardest time breaking into the league. We tend to see a really slow entry. And Justin Jefferson's got 600 yards already, 3 touchdowns. He's on pace for 1,206, which would be great for any receiver, but for a rookie is pretty amazing. He also has 250-plus yard games. He's been an absolute force in a really anemic passing offense. And there was a number one there who was pretty solid in Adam Thielen, and he's kind of supplanting him, which is pretty amazing. If he was in a higher volume offense, it'd be easier to explain the numbers, but in this bad passing offense, those numbers are pretty incredible.
I like it. I think you're wrong, but that's okay. I like it. I think all three of these guys have shown really, a lot for a rookie. And I think we've seen a lot of good young talent here in the NFL this, so far this year. Let's talk Super Bowl prediction. This isn't an award, obviously, but we're halfway through the season. It's on everyone's mind. Who do we think is going to be in the Super Bowl? Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Eric, who do you got?
So it's hard for me to go away from the Chiefs. Their defense has been fairly solid, and Mahomes just looks like he can just pull out any game whenever he needs to. So Chiefs on the AFC side, and then I'm going to mix it up in the NFC a little bit, go with the Packers. I like the fact that they can obviously they have a good passing game with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, but I like the fact that they can run the ball really well too once Aaron Jones gets healthy. I think they're a little more multidimensional than, say, the Seahawks. And while I don't think a whole lot of the Packers defense, it's better than the Seahawks defense. So I don't know. I just kind of see Aaron Rodgers and Adams getting hot in the playoffs and sprinkling some Aaron Jones, and they take the, or at least get to the Super Bowl. I don't know if they could beat the Chiefs though.
Mike, what about you?
Yeah, I'll say if the Packers, there was a rumor that the Packers were going to trade for Will Fuller. And if they had traded for Will Fuller, I think they would have been my Super Bowl favorite. But I'm worried that that one receiver is going to come back and haunt them when they face these better playoff teams. So I had the Chiefs as well. Again, I think they're just an incredibly loaded offense, and I think they can score on any defense almost at will. I had them playing the Seahawks, though. And maybe this one's a little bit of a dream because those two offenses together in primetime would just be so much fun. We might see like 80 points. Seahawks have really looked great. They lost to the Bills today, but I think they're going to win the West. And Russell Wilson has a ton of playoff experience, Super Bowl experience. He wouldn't be nervous in the big game. And yeah, I got the Chiefs against the Seahawks with the Chiefs on top.
That would absolutely be a fantastic Super Bowl for sure. I mean, I don't think it would get more exciting than, I don't think you could pick two better offenses to face off than those two. And not just this year, but like in recent memory, these two offenses are incredibly explosive. It would be super fun. But for me, you know, I'm looking at the AFC. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of these teams have been, you know, great year over year, and we've seen them before. And I think it's time for someone new. I think it's time for some fresh blood. I think it's the Buffalo Bills year to make it to the Super Bowl. And what happens when the Buffalo Bills make it to the Super Bowl? We all know that they lose to an NFC East team. So which NFC East team is going to rise from the ashes, win the division with like six wins, and then run through the playoffs? I've got the Washington football team. And why is that? It's karma. Because in 2012, Alex Smith was the quarterback. He led the 49ers to a 6-2 record. And then he gets hurt. Colin Kaepernick comes in, and Kaepernick, he can run and stuff and whatever. And the 49ers make it to the Super Bowl. And if they had Alex Smith playing, they would have won that year. They didn't. This is Alex Smith's time. He's now getting the chance while other players are getting injured. Eric, don't you laugh at me. I am dead serious about this. I've got the Washington football team with a 6-10 record over the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl.
Miles, I know the Cowboys are rough right now, but you might need to cut back on the drinking before the podcast.
I am absolutely losing it every time the Cowboys lose. It kills a little bit of me on the inside. I had to do it. I'm sorry, but I will say this. You know, I don't think Washington's actually making the playoffs. I don't think they're going to the Super Bowl. I do think the Bills are a legitimate contender. They might be a little bit too green to make it to the Super Bowl, but all you have to do is get hot in January. I think when Josh Allen is hot, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And, you know, I would love to see the Bills, this young team really, really get there. So I think it would be fantastic. And hey, let's talk about the Bills. Easy transition. Let's talk about their game today. Buffalo Bills beat the Seattle Seahawks in a potential Super Bowl preview, 44-34 in Buffalo. 9 touchdowns scored this game, almost all by fantasy relevant players. There was a couple touchdowns from the Bills to like Isaiah McKenzie or something like that. I think that's his name. Who cares? But it was a really great game. Bills were mostly in control of this game. Really, it just came down to those 4 turnovers by Russell Wilson that the Bills forced him into. 2 interceptions, 2 fumbles lost. Kind of a crazy game. Let's talk about the Bills passing game. Josh Allen, we mentioned him at the top of the show. Fantastic performance. Obviously, Stephon Diggs and John Brown did fantastic, but Eric and Mike, did you guys see enough Gabriel Davis or Cole Beasley today to have any interest in them moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Gabriel Davis. I think there's just too many people for him to fight through every week, but he's got a bright future. I've talked him up a lot. So, but this was John Brown's first big game since week 2, so maybe he's finally getting healthy. He was so consistent last year. I think he's going to slot in ahead of those two, and maybe if anything, Davis takes some work from Beasley, although Beasley's a slot receiver, so he's always going to have his role. But no, I'm probably not going out for either of them. But this is just whoever is getting the snaps in this passing game is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'll agree. It's Diggs and Brown. You can see by targets, receptions, yardage, basically every metric, they were the best two, and they passed the eye test best. You'll see Davis or Beasley or insert name here popping up week to week, but nobody else is too interesting.
Well, John Brown's only rostered in 62% of leagues. If he is healthy and he's, you know, the number two there in Buffalo, is he interesting enough to warrant rostering everywhere?
Yeah, for sure. I'd definitely go out and get him. And it seems like he avoided any setbacks. So as long as he's healthy, he's a good, wide receiver three most weeks.
Yeah, I would add him, and I'll give him the ultimate compliment of, I think I would put him over my Curtis Samuel waiver pick.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty big. But yeah, John Brown, I mean, he might only be available because people, you know, were tired of waiting for him to be healthy, but he looks healthy and the Bills want to pass the ball. And speaking of wanting to pass the ball, they did not run it very much today. Only 19 rushing attempts, 7 of which were Josh Allen, 2 carries for Devin Singletary. What happened?
It's brutal. Zach Moss got 38 snaps and Singletary 31. So it's not like Singletary wasn't out there, but I'm pretty sure this is the second straight week Moss has led in snaps. So he's kind of overtaking him. He gets the red zone work, and we just know Singletary's not going to score. So, he contributes 3 for 33 in the air, Singletary does. But other than that, I'm pretty down on him. I've moved Moss ahead of him rest of season. But like you said, this is not a rushing team anymore. This is a passing team, especially in a game against the Seahawks like this. But you're looking at the receivers now over the running backs, which is kind of weird in Buffalo.
Mike, I know you like Devin Singletary. Are you finally out on him after only 2 carries this week?
Yeah, this was brutal. I keep wanting to make an excuse for him, but I don't think there's any excuse I can make. Obviously, Buffalo had a pretty easy time passing today. Josh Allen had a super high completion percentage, 400 yards. And he's been having a good year, obviously. But when you put up 400 yards and that easy of a completion percentage, obviously you saw something in that defense that was – you were able to just kind of rip to shreds. Even still, 19 rushes for 34 as a team makes me just not want to start anybody in this running game. So for me, I think Moss and Singletary are completely unusable right now.
I don't know if I'd go that far, only because, and this is going to lead to Seattle, but Eric, we talked last week about, DJ Dallas didn't have a great game in terms of yards, but was able to score 2 touchdowns last week, because being part of that Seahawks offense, you're going to get those opportunities. We talk about Zach Moss being, you know, the red zone running back for the Bills. They're going to score a lot of points every week. And yes, a lot of those are going to be through the air, but Moss is going to get opportunities. I don't love, having to have a touchdown dependent running back, but there's some weeks where that's the best you can do. So I like Zach Moss if we're kind of going. I mean, I like him as much as I like DJ Dallas, and we, had DJ Dallas as like an RB12, RB13. So, I like this week specifically, I should say, about Dallas, not normally. Yeah. So I like Moss. But again, great transition to Seattle, because DJ Dallas again today, not a huge day in terms of yards, only 39 total yards from scrimmage, but he scored a touchdown on the ground. So if you picked him up, you got to be feeling pretty good about what you're getting from Dallas.
Yeah, and he did miss some time with an injury, so that kind of hurt him. And then the game script hurt him too, because Seattle was trailing quite a bit. So Travis Homer actually led with 31 snaps, DJ Dallas 20, Collins 13. So he did pretty well considering the injury and just some other stuff. So, yep, he's going to give you a good shot at a touchdown. He performed better than Homer did. Homer's more of the passing game back. So, keep him as long as Hyde and Carson are out. I think you can start him, but probably even if just Carlos Hyde was back, you wouldn't be able to start Dallas anymore.
Yeah, I think you got to hang on to him because we still don't know what the status for them is going to be. But considering Carson was ruled out like on Saturday, it seems like he's getting closer to playing. I wouldn't expect to see Dallas out there again next week. I imagine Carson will be back. But, I think a lot of people that picked up DJ Dallas have Chris Carson. So just hang on to him and you're going to be good either way. In the receiving game, I mean, DK Metcalf, a fantastic player and he's shown, I think he's really the best wide receiver there in Seattle, but, Tyler Lockett, 2 weeks in a row now of kind of disappointing performance after that huge game. Is this just Tyler Lockett? He's going to have these boom bust performances, I guess. Is that where we're at now with him?
Well, I do think DK Metcalf is the better player. He's just a physical freak, and he's obviously got the connection with Wilson. So we're bumping him to the wide receiver one there. But, I mean, they had a crazy play that just fell incomplete that would have been just one of those insane Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett touchdowns. So it almost was a better day. So you're going to keep starting him. He's just maybe more in the wide receiver two tier than he was early on in the season. I think I was probably ranking him in the top 10 a lot of weeks there early on.
Yeah, with Lockett, I'm not too worried. He still had the targets there. If the slow day is four receptions and 40 yards, I can live with that because I know there's going to be a two touchdown day around the corner. We know Russell Wilson's going to throw. We know this offense is kind of taking all the restrictions off and they just want to let it fly. It's unfortunate to see a 4 for 40 in this offense, but better days are ahead.
Yeah, he still had 7 targets. Metcalf led the way with 9. So, I mean, he's still involved in the offense. And as you said, 4 for 40 is not a bad, you know, bad day. It just you definitely been expecting more from Tyler Lockett lately. Let's talk about the, you know, from one MVP candidate in Russell Wilson to the other. Let's talk about the Chiefs game as they beat the Carolina Panthers 33-31. This was quite the game. I mean, honestly, you know, Panthers had the lead early. Chiefs, you know, took the lead kind of, I think, in the third quarter. And then Panthers had a chance to win the game. They got the ball with 90 seconds left. I think they had were at the 9, so they had, you know, probably 60, 70 yards to go. But, you know, they didn't quite get that far. And Joey Sly just missed on a 67-yard attempt. He missed by a lot. But they tried, and they didn't win. But it was a good game. And honestly, I think if you're a Panthers fan, you look at this and you say, hey, we're healthy. We're back. We only lost by 2 to the Chiefs in Kansas City. Absolutely fantastic game from them. We talked about all their performances already at the top of the show. So really, if you want to hear more on the Panthers, go up to the winners and losers section because we talk a lot about all of them. But are there any final thoughts from you guys that we didn't touch on earlier on DJ Moore or Christian McCaffrey, any of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the Panthers did a really good job early on of just keeping the Chiefs offense off the field. So they've got a pretty good possession offense. I like how they're running this thing. Bridgewater might not be the most explosive, but he makes good decisions. He's good moving in the pocket. And then I will also note that Mike Davis still saw 10 or 5 targets. So you couple that with CMC's 10 targets, and there was a lot of work to the running backs here. So big days ahead for McCaffrey. Not that you needed to hear that, but Bridgewater is going to get him the ball for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good on this one. I think we'll see DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel kind of pop up and disappear the way the coverage plays them. I think they'll take the easy completions here. I think it's going to be Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey, and then who else pops up behind them in a given week.
Okay. And then with Kansas City, I mean, the passing game is always easy for them. I mean, Travis Kelce, we talked about him, and Tyreek Hill, both top performers on the day, as well as Mahomes. So, you know, nice and easy there. I mean, if you have Mecole Hardman still, you know, again, he's really only going to be relevant if Hill ever goes out, kind of like a wide receiver handcuff, really. But, you know, I mean, 3 for 48, it's not terrible. He's still involved. Let's talk about the running game because this is on a lot of people's mind. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 5 carries, 14 yards. Le'Veon Bell, 4 carries, 8 yards. I know the Chiefs were coming from behind for most of the game, but they had the lead for probably the last 25 to 40% of the game. So, you know, what's going on? You know, can we trust either one of these running backs? Is it time to sell? Can you still sell on CEH at a price that you'd want to? I mean, where are you at on these guys?
So CEH, I still feel the best about. He led the snaps, 25 snaps, 19 for Le'Veon, 18 for Darrell Williams. Williams was actually playing more than Le'Veon early on, which was interesting. But no, I mean, CEH got a touchdown, clearly designed play for him in the red zone. This is just, I mean, the passing game was just so efficient and so explosive that they just don't need to run sometimes. So you definitely want the passing game work, and Edwards-Helaire at least got you 5 targets, 3 catches, and a touchdown. So that's encouraging. I don't know. I would buy low on Edwards. I don't think I'd sell low on him, though.
Yeah, if I own him, and I wouldn't sell. It just feels like you're selling at the worst point. If you get someone who would give you that first-round price people were paying at the start of the season, yeah, I would sell in a heartbeat. My worry here is that the Chiefs are obviously playoff bound, and the Chiefs are obviously looking like a Super Bowl team as 2 of us picked them. My worry is they're not going to give Clyde Edwards-Helaire any kind of crazy workload because they want him fresh and healthy in the playoffs. And they're smart enough to use him a little bit, make sure he's ready to go, but use some of the dead workload on Le'Veon Bell and just kind of wear him out instead of their young guy who's going to be important to the playoff push. I think CEH won't come playoff time is going to be a big deal on this team, but I just don't see these next like 4 or 5 weeks as they just want to get to the playoffs healthy.
Okay. I mean, real quick, yes or no, are you wanting to start CEH next week?
I'll start him. I'm not going to feel great about it, though. As Eric said, there's the red zone opportunity and all the scoring that's going to happen on this team. I'm just not going to think of him as a locked in like RB1 or even necessarily an RB2.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they are on a bye next week, but the next game, yes, I'll start him. It's against the Raiders, and he's their best running back. He's better than Le'Veon Bell at this stage. So, you know, you're going to have some down weeks, but I still think the touchdown potential is there.
Well, obviously, that was a trap question, Eric. I was going to, you know, spring the, hey, they're on a bye. You wouldn't start him next week.
I've learned from now. You've done this before, Toomey.
Yeah, so it sounds like both of you guys are still willing to start Clyde Edwards-Helaire moving forward, but I don't know. I'd be a little hesitant. I'd be looking for other options personally. I just if this is the floor, you know, I thought that his floor was a lot higher than this, and this is very, you know, concerning to see for me. But hey, I mean, you know, he's one of the best players, that, you know, one of the best running backs in the NFL, and hopefully he can you know, get a chance to show that here in Kansas City. Okay. Let's talk about the Atlanta Falcons beating the Denver Broncos. They did not Falcons this game up. They held on to win. You know, this game was nowhere near as close as the, you know, final score might suggest. You know, Falcons win 34-27. The Falcons are up 34-13 midway through the fourth. I know the Broncos scored two touchdowns and had the ball, you know, with a chance to win, but it really, they didn't threaten on that final drive. And the Falcons, I mean, those two touchdowns were really more garbage time than anything else for the Broncos. But this was easily Jerry Jeudy's best game of his young career. 7 receptions, 125 yards and a touchdown. Eric, you know, I know you're high on Jerry Jeudy. What did you see from him today?
Yeah, looks good. He had a really nice on his touchdown. It was a really nice route. We all know he's a great route runner. So, yeah, I think it's happening. He's taken over this offense. 14 targets. He had 10 targets last week. So, great sign. And Tim Patrick was even back out there this week, and it didn't matter. So, I love Jerry Jeudy the rest of the season. Locke is, you know, he's not he makes a lot of bad decisions, but garbage time comes around. It's been some nice fantasy scoring. So, yep, super high on Jeudy, and hopefully you picked him up when he hit waivers, because I got him in some leagues where he hit waivers.
The talent's obvious there, and we all know the pedigree. I'm not going to expect this week to week. I'm not going to say he's already hit Justin Jefferson range, where he's clearly like a number one weapon for the team and someone they're going to go to repeatedly. But this is a super encouraging sign, and hopefully we see something like this or similar next week, the week after.
Yeah, I mean, you know, against the Falcons, it's kind of, we're hoping for something like this, because this is the kind of game where he could easily blow up. And, you know, you mentioned Eric, Drew Locke is just not really that great of a quarterback. I mean, 25 for 48 against the Falcons secondary is not really, you know, encouraging. But as long as he can get the ball to Jeudy, you know, that's all that really matters. Well, and Fant, that'd be great too. KJ Hamler, though, second on the team in targets with 10, 6 receptions, 75 yards. I remember you being excited about him when Cortland Sutton went down, that you mentioned, you know, we're all looking at the wrong players. We should be looking at KJ Hamler. So what did you see from him today?
Definitely encouraging to see 10 targets. So I'm not trusting too many options in this offense. I believe it was Callen last week who said that he's seen bad quarterbacks provide good fantasy work before, like Jameis Winston. And I think that's what we could be looking here with Locke. I mean, he's going to take shots downfield. So fantasy wise, we can get some production, but I still think it's Jeudy, it's Fant, and it's the running backs in this offense.
Yeah, it's worth repeating, Miles, what you said, that they played the Falcons and we know what the Falcons defense is. It's one of those really bad defenses this year. And the target numbers as a result were all super inflated. Jeudy had 14, Hamler had 10, Patrick had 9. And hopefully that's them saying, hey, well, let's see what these young guys can do. But it would be, I think it's safe to say those numbers are all going to come down a bit moving forward.
Okay, so you guys are both more interested in John Brown and Curtis Samuel than KJ Hamler?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think Hamler's and Samuel aren't that far apart, but Samuel's got a lot longer of a track record of, you know, just being an NFL player.
Okay. Now, Eric, you mentioned this is Judy, Fant, and the running backs, but the running backs didn't really show up today. Lindsay, 8 for 23 on the ground. Melvin Gordon, 6 for 18 and added 9 yards through the air. So how much faith can we have in this backfield if they're really going to be splitting the work like this?
Yeah, and I didn't mean that they were good in this game for sure, but we've seen Gordon and Lindsay have some pretty good fantasy games in the past, so that's I'm not giving on up on them just yet. Melvin Gordon, 44 snaps today. Philip Lindsay, 28. You know, I don't know. There will be better days for them, but this was certainly an ugly performance, and it is better when one of them is out because they're splitting up the work a bunch. Lindsay got more carries despite the fewer snaps, so but neither of them produced much. So I don't know. Maybe Locke gets his feet under him and they can get a running game going, but right now it's kind of ugly.
Yeah, the game script certainly didn't help the running backs here. They were down 10-0 after the first, 20-3 after the second, 27-6 after the third. They just, I mean, when you're down that much at halftime, it's hard to say, oh, yeah, we're gonna run the ball 15, 20 times today.
That's fair. And then for the Falcons, I mean, this is pretty much the offense we're hoping to see all year long. I mean, obviously without Calvin Ridley, and that sucks because that, you know, 4 receptions, 103 yards, and a touchdown for Olamide Zaccheaus could have easily been Calvin Ridley's line. I asked you, Eric, on Wednesday if you were at all concerned that Ridley out would have the same effect on this offense as Julio out, and you said no. You know, you think this offense goes as Julio goes, and that's obviously the case because they did just fine without Ridley today. You know, Matt Ryan threw for 3 touchdowns. Todd Gurley, you know, scored a touchdown on the ground. I think that's really the best you can hope for from Gurley, right? I mean, we're not going to see huge yardage gains from him at this point in his career, but as long as he can find the end zone, whether, you know, on purpose or by accident, will be fine from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, he's super touchdown dependent, but I mean, he's racking him up. So yeah, agree with everything you said. I would say it was frustrating as a Calvin Ridley owner to see Matt Ryan connect on that deep pass to Zaccheaus. They've missed a couple to Ridley this year, which would have, you know, even boosted some of Ridley's big games. So that was a little frustrating. But yeah, for sure, Julio is the key for this offense to keep everything running. And I just wanted to mention Hayden Hurst. He has had 6 or more targets in 6 of 9 weeks this year in each of the last 3 games. So he's been a pretty dependable tight end, and it doesn't look like that's stopping anytime soon.
I like to hear that. I mean, tight ends are such a wasteland that if you can find someone who's getting, you know, involvement in the offense and actually catching the ball, looking at you, Evan Ingram, you can have good production there. So hopefully we can see more of the same from Hayden Hurst. Mike, unfortunately, it's that time. We're going to have to talk about the Chicago Bears. You know, I really don't know what to say. I mean, remember when the Bears were 5-1? That was pretty cool.
Well, what I'll say is I always tempered expectations with this team. I've always thought they were about a 500 team. They have a better than average defense. I would call it good, somewhere in the good to great range. They've got a terrible offense, and that combo is just going to be, yeah, we're going to win about half our games. What I saw from the team today, Nick Foles has not been impressive at all. That continues. He picked up some yards and some scores late. I think he got both touchdowns, I believe, in the last 5 minutes of the game. He probably picked up 100-plus yards in that time. The first 3.5 quarters, he was nothing. He should have thrown a couple picks in this one. He got away with a couple mistakes. To the running game, David Montgomery got hurt. He also had a bad soft fumble. He caught a short pass, and someone just easily pickpocketed him. He had a couple plays where some holes opened, and he wasn't able to get there quickly enough to hit them. We'll have to keep an eye on him with that injury. I think it was a concussion, if I remember correctly. And then the passing game kind of saved it late. As I said, Allen Robinson's still the guy to own here. Anthony Miller was nice. Darnell Mooney still looks like the guy of the future, where if you're in dynasty or a really deep league, he's going to be a fun name to have in the next couple of years. But yeah, overall, just not much going on with this offense.
Well, I mean, you mentioned a couple times about how it saved them late. I mean, they told me, at least my coaches when I was young and playing sports, it's not about how you start, it's about how you finish, right? So obviously that's all that matters is what the Bears did in the final 5 minutes. In all seriousness, though, you know, I like seeing Anthony Miller being involved. That's one thing that we hadn't seen at the beginning of the year. So I know a lot of us were high on Miller at the beginning of the year. A lot of people had him stashed away. Is it time that we stash him again if he continues to be this involved in the offense?
I'm going to say no. Even in this one where he put up something, Mooney still out-targeted him. and it still felt like Mooney was a bigger part of the plan. So while I would love Miller to pop, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. Jimmy Graham scored a touchdown today, which pretty much if he scores a touchdown, he has a good game. Otherwise, he's usually not involved enough to really be relevant at tight end. Although 11.5 PPR points today without that touchdown. So the volume was good. And Graham does get the targets in the end zone. So if you're looking for a touchdown dependent tight end, we've been saying all year, Jimmy Graham is probably the best one that's, you know, widely available. With Tennessee, I mean, this is kind of a disappointing game on the ground for both teams. Derrick Henry, only 68 yards rushing. You know, Mike, you mentioned that you said the Bears are good to great offense or great defense. They did really well against Henry today. I think you guys have one of the best defenses in the league to bottle up Henry the way you did. Eric, we keep talking about him. Let's talk about Jonnu Smith. He had 2 targets this week. Anthony Firkser had 6. If Jonnu doesn't score a touchdown, this week is a whole nother week of why do we have Jonnu Smith on our fantasy team? So talk me off the ledge here. I'm ready to drop him.
No, my note says he's useless without a touchdown. So you're right on it. I mean, like you said, Firkser got more targets last week. I thought it was kind of fluky, but it's 2 straight weeks. So yeah, I just kind of got stuck with him and had to start him this week, and the touchdown definitely bailed me out. But I wouldn't be opposed to dropping him. This has been 3 or 4 straight weeks now of just nothing. So you can't keep rolling him out there every week. So unless you got deep benches and you can stash him, I'd get rid of him.
Now, one thing I will note, the Titans did not throw the ball much today. Only 21 attempts from Ryan Tannehill. That's because they led pretty much the entire – well, they led the entire game. They were up 10-0 at halftime, 17-0. In the third. So, and we know the Titans don't want to throw the ball unless they have to. So there is that, but, you know, of the 21 attempts, 15 of those targets went to AJ Brown or Anthony Firkser. So it's really tough to see a you know, direct path to success for Jonnu Smith, other than the fact that he's a tight end and it doesn't take much for a tight end to be fantasy relevant. But yeah, and hopefully better days ahead for Derrick Henry. He got the work as always, but that Bears defense just did a great job of bottling him up.
AJ Brown could have had an even bigger day. He had a deep shot early that Ryan Tannehill just missed. He got behind coverage and he could have been looking at, you know, 150, 160 and a pair of touchdowns. He is so much fun to watch. He's just incredible with the ball. Cornerback tries to tackle him. He just kind of pushes him over and is like, get out of here. He's like watching like a college player play against like a high school team.
I think you can give your Bears a little bit more credit than being a high school team, but at least on defense, your offense is definitely JV levels of a high school team, but defensively you guys are a lot better than that. Let's go to another boring defensive game. The Baltimore Ravens went into Indianapolis today and won 24-10. And I have to get this off my chest. That has to be the worst interception call in NFL history. I mean, it was like, okay, I will give a pass to the bad interceptions that are called interceptions on the field. And then when they go to overturn it, it looks kind of hazy. And they're like, it's not conclusive. We have to let the call stand, even though the ball probably did hit the ground or whatever. Fine. That's fine. They call it interception on the field. It's hard to overturn them. This was ruled an incomplete pass on the field and it was overturned. That was so obviously not an interception. Obviously, it doesn't matter. Phillip Rivers isn't fantasy relevant anyway. I can't believe they called that an interception. Go watch the play. It was absolutely horrible and kind of changed the momentum of the game. The Colts were winning 10-7. That interception, you know, gives the Ravens the ball. They immediately score a touchdown. They don't give up the lead after that. It blew my mind that happened. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it really irked me.
Yeah, I saw it. Can you imagine like a receiver getting a touchdown on that play? Like, I don't know. It seemed almost like because it was an interception, they gave him the benefit of the doubt or something. It was bizarre. I totally on board with you.
So I'll have to be the counterpoint here because I only saw it once, to be fair. So maybe with, you know, the 700 angles that the NFL provides, I would have seen something different that changes my mind. But I saw him get his hands on the ball, take 3 steps. That to me is a catch. I thought he had it. Then I thought it was knocked out and that should have been a live ball, a fumble after the interception. But I thought he showed enough to catch the ball.
I'm going to say this. If that's a catch, then Dez caught it because they said that third step was a football move. Like that's if that's a football move, then whatever Dez did, that was yeah. Anyway, I couldn't believe it. But let's talk about the Ravens offense, because it wasn't fantastic today. They're still committed to running the ball. That's good. J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards still got more than 10 carries. That's good. They combined for 53 yards. That's not good. Are we still interested in Dobbins and Edwards as long as Ingram is out?
Yeah, these have just been two brutal matchups. So it's just we'll see how long Ingram's out, but there are going to be better days here for sure. Snap count wise, it was 35 for Dobbins, 24 for Edwards, and Justice Hill only 4. So as long as it's a two-man backfield, we should be excited. But 38 carries for 110 yards as a team for the Ravens, just, you know, that just shows the good opponent they were against. I will say, for Lamar Jackson's stock going forward, he's getting a lot more rushing volume. He's had double-digit rushes for back-to-back weeks, and he hadn't done that since week 2. So Lamar is running the ball a lot more, and I think that's going to really the running game's really going to take off against a bad opponent. So stick with them. We'll see how much longer Ingram's out.
Yeah, I'm still interested in both running backs. As we said for a while this season, three guys being here all splitting the carries is too much. Two guys splitting the carries I can live with. And yeah, it didn't work out great this week. But as Eric said, this was a tough defense. This was a tough matchup, and we shouldn't have expected huge things here in the first place. But yeah, I'm happy to start Dobbins and Edwards and hope for the best.
Well, I mean, Edwards scored a touchdown, and that kind of saved his day. And you know, he to me reminds me, he's like Zach Moss and Todd Gurley and these guys who we say, as long as they're, you know, getting those opportunities near the goal line, it makes them relevant. In the passing game, this is another bad week for the Ravens. I mean, I guess Lamar didn't turn the ball over multiple times, and he completed 19 out of 23, so that's good. But, you know, Marquise Brown talked about how he wants the ball more. He got it. He had 3 whole receptions today and 5 whole targets for 38 yards. And then Mark Andrews, same thing, 3 receptions on 5 targets, only 22 yards. I mean, where are we at now on Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews?
Yeah, I mean, this passing game's pretty brutal. You're going to have some big days when Hollywood busts a big play. But, I mean, this is so much of the work that was going to the running backs and tight ends, too. I mean, you've got, I think, 8 catches from receivers in this game. So there's just not much that you're dividing up there. And when Willie Snead gets 4, there's just only so much upside for Brown. So he's just a boom-bust wide receiver 3 at this point for me.
Yeah, this passing game is I made some notes watching this one because I know Jackson's been off passing wise for a while. He's been under 210 yards for 7 straight games. And he was under 200 yards in, I think, 4 of those, including one where he was under 100 yards. So this offense just has no volume at all. I mean, I talk about the Bears offense as being low volume passing, but this is a whole new level. Andrews, I'm still fine to start because he's so used in the red zone that when he gets his touchdowns, he's fine. Marquise Brown is tough, though, because the volume is so low that if he doesn't hit a big play, he just doesn't have many chances to hit a big play. He might only get, you know, 1-2 a week, and that's it. And they just won't take many more shots because they can run the ball.
Yeah, the tough thing about tight end, and I think we've said this on every single show that I've been on this year, both the Wednesday and the Sunday show, is that there's only so many tight ends that are actually involved in the offenses. And then beyond that, you're praying for a touchdown. And Mark Andrews is definitely the top guy of the second group that you're praying for a touchdown. I think we're all hoping he'd be more involved in the passing game overall, and we'd see more of like closer to Kittle and Kelsey, you know, levels of involvement. That's not the case clearly, but I think he's still clearly the number one guy of the, hopefully he can score because, you know, that's really all he is at this point. With the Colts, just real quick passing game, anyone interesting? Jack Doyle went out with an injury. Does that make like Trey Burton or Mo Alie-Cox interesting?
No, I'm not super excited about the tight ends. I would say Michael Pittman Jr., he was tied for the team lead in targets. He's been hurt, but he's at least a promising rookie. So he's back and healthy, and maybe keep an eye on him, but I'm not adding him yet.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need it. That's plenty on the Colts passing game, but the running game, that's what we need to talk about, because for the second straight week, Jordan Wilkins out-carried Jonathan Taylor. Wilkins had 11 carries for 39 yards. Taylor 6 for 27. Taylor did score a touchdown, but what did you guys see in this backfield today?
Yeah, this was a tough one. I mean, Jonathan Taylor had a big fumble that got returned for a touchdown. It's actually his first fumble of the year, so it's not like this has been a big issue, and they just pretty much benched him. I mean, I don't know exactly how many touches he had after the fumble, but it was the Jordan Wilkins show after that. Final snap count, Jordan Wilkins 23, Nyheim Hines 22, Jonathan Taylor 22. So it's panic time. There've been too many different reasons they've gone away from Taylor this year. And it doesn't seem like it's injury related, that something's going on that we don't know. And it's panic time with Taylor.
Yeah, it was brutal to see Indianapolis just basically throw Taylor in the doghouse after that mistake. As Eric said, that was the first fumble of the year for him. And after that play, it was like he was invisible to them. They had no interest in using him. That makes him very hard to trust. And it makes me want to buy back in on Nyheim Hines. Because if Taylor is out of the picture or if they're minimizing his role, I think that gives Hines a lot more use in the passing game. I don't think Wilkins is a threat in the passing game. So if Wilkins becomes the 10 to 15 carry guy, because they're still angry with Taylor or whatever the problem is there, then Hines becomes more interesting for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very clearly not happy with Taylor's performance. Apparently during their bye week, they worked on the running game, pretty much that whole time. And Taylor did not clearly get the memo based on his performance the past 2 weeks. And talked about it extensively last Sunday, Taylor's benching at the beginning of the fourth quarter when he couldn't score the touchdown on second and one at the goal line. And they gave Wilkins the every single carry from then on out. So I don't think they're really happy with the way Taylor's been playing. I think obviously the talent is there. I think they know the talent is there, but he's not living up to their standards just in the way he's producing on the field. So I think we're going to continue to see Jonathan Taylor get a handful of carries and get the chance to show that he's learned his lesson. But I keep thinking they're just not going to be happy with him. So I don't know. How much we can trust Jonathan Taylor at this point.
Yeah, and it started out positive. I mean, he scored a touchdown. He had six carries for 27 yards. It was going the right way, and it's just, all it took was one play. So there's something. They're just looking to bench him, it seems like.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the Minnesota Vikings' victory over the Detroit Lions. They win 34-20. Both teams are now 3-5 on the year, just slumming it up at the bottom of the NFC North. Kirk Cousins. Does anyone want to let him know that if he's going to bother to throw touchdown passes, he could at least throw them to Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen? Like, why is Irv Smith Jr. getting two touchdowns and Amir Abdullah, who I didn't even know was still in the NFL? Why are these guys getting touchdown passes? I mean, come on, Kirk, you got to throw them to Jefferson and Thielen. And I guess Cook at the very least, you could throw it to Cook. But Irv Smith Jr., two touchdowns at the tight end position. Do we have any interest?
I mean, it's, Kyle Rudolph had three catches and four targets, so they're just chopping up the work, and this is such a low-volume passing offense that I have a hard time getting too excited about Irv Smith. I mean, they had 34 carries in this game and only 21 dropbacks, so you're just fighting over scraps most week in this offense. So, no, not super excited about Irv Smith, but, hey, it's tight end.
Yeah, I loved his talent coming into the year, but the volume is so low. His personal volume has been very low, and expecting a touchdown in this offense is such a roulette wheel spin, because it's like Jefferson's ahead of you, Cook's ahead of you, Thielen's ahead of you. Kyle Rudolph might be ahead of you still. I don't really know. It's really hard to rely on Irv Smith as a touchdown threat consistently.
I don't think Kyle Rudolph's ahead of anyone with how slow he runs. He's like perennially behind everyone else running routes. I mean, Kirk Cousins has thrown 34 passes in the last 2 weeks combined. So I don't really see. I mean, that are we at the point now where we kind of have to look for reasons to start Jefferson and Thielen as opposed to looking for reasons to bench them? At least in the case of Thielen, who, I mean, I know Jefferson isn't as widely started, but I think everyone who has Thielen is still rolling him out there. I don't know if I feel comfortable with that anymore.
It's just wild because they only threw to six different receivers. I mean, you've got two different running backs, two different tight ends, and then literally just Jefferson and Thielen. So, I mean, it's so focused on a few players in this offense, but the total is so low in the passing game. Yeah, you still have to put Thielen and Jefferson out there, I think, unless you're just stacked at receiver, but you're going to have these down weeks for sure. But they did play the Lions and they had a lead, so that's not going to happen most weeks.
Yeah, Thielen's got touchdowns in five of his eight games, and he's got seven touchdowns in his eight games. So his season is pacing out nicely touchdown-wise. It's just, yeah, this was a rough one, and that's the nature of Minnesota. He's going to have some games where he ends up with, like, 30 yards.
And going to the Detroit side of the ball, we thought this might be the Chase Daniel week, and it turns out we did get a Chase Daniel sighting. as Matthew Stafford, you know, left the game. If it was evaluated for concussion, he seemed to be okay. Should be on track for next week. But I think the real most exciting thing, at least from a fantasy standpoint, is DeAndre Swift again being super involved, led the team in carries with 13, had 64 yards on those, and then also had five targets through the air and turned that into three receptions for 33 yards. So are we, Swift been involved now multiple weeks in a row? I think we feel safe starting him, right?
Yeah, but as everything with the Lions, we have good news and bad news here. So the snap count was 30 for Swift, 25 for Kerryon Johnson, and 20 for Adrian Peterson. So it's still chopped up. And they threw 13 targets to the running backs. For some reason, they threw five targets to Adrian Peterson, which I'm not sure why. They literally flexed him out wide once as a wide receiver. And I was just like, if that's what you're going to be doing, why is it Swifted there? So it's typical Lions stuff. But yeah, I mean, he's the lead back here and most fantasy upside. And hopefully he can just kind of string together a second half where he forces their hand. But yeah, it's just it's the similar split as it's always been.
Yeah, I'm still out on Swift. This is only, I think this is only his second game with 10 or more carries. And Adrian Peterson clearly didn't go away. And as we said, they're finding creative ways to use Adrian Peterson because that's a great thing to do.
In 2020,
maybe 10 years ago. Yeah, but I don't trust the Lions. I had a friend who had Kerryon Johnson in his roster last year, and first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, every week he's like, man, why don't they just use him properly? And then the same thing happens with Swift this year. So yeah, I can't trust him.
All right. And then in the passing game, I mean, TJ Hawkinson, yeah, it remains, solid, scores a touchdown this week. I think if you have Hawk, you feel good. Just, you know, keep rolling him out there. Marvin Jones scored a touchdown. So he did do something, but only 3 receptions, 43 yards. I mean, I think once Galladay comes back, Jones is going to be wholly uninteresting again. I still think he's not that interesting, but I understand that, you know, he has touchdown potential. I think you can do better than having a touchdown dependent wide receiver, but you know, you might be stuck in a league or two. So if you are, Marvin Jones is an option there. I really don't want to talk about this game. It's just as ugly as the first time around, but the New York Giants are now 2-0 against the Washington football team. By a combined total score of 43-39. So these have been a couple of real exciting games to watch, let me tell you. We talked a lot about the Washington football team offense at the top of the show in the injury news and notes section. So if you want to hear more about Alex Smith's performance, how that might impact Terry McLaurin, J.D. McKissick, Antonio Gibson, go back up to that part of the show to check in on that. For New York, Sterling Shepard continues his streak of 6-plus receptions. That's 4 games in a row now, not including the Bears game, which is the game he got injured in. So Sterling Shepard is 51% rostered. That has to change, right? I mean, Shepard, where are you ranking him in terms of waiver claims, above or below John Brown?
I think I'd probably take John Brown because he actually has a good quarterback. So, I mean, his 8 targets only resulted in 39 yards this week. This passing game's not very fun to watch. So I'd have to do full comparison between the schedules, but Giants need to be in a good schedule to get much from this passing game.
Yeah, I'd be low on Shepard. He wouldn't supplant any of the claims we've talked about so far.
Oh, so you'd have him below Curtis Samuel.
I would. I just don't trust this offense. I don't trust Daniel Jones, who had another pair of fumbles today. The whole thing is still, I think, a mess.
Eric, would you also want to pick up Curtis Samuel before Sterling Shepard?
I might. Giants' upcoming schedule isn't bad, though. Eagles, then Bengals, Seahawks, Cardinals. So that's nice. I do think he's got a lot of competition for a bad offense, though. So, it's close. I think Samuel's the better player, though.
Okay. I like Shepard in PPR leagues. I think he's got a high floor. Obviously not a huge amount of upside, but I don't think Shepard will ever have like what happened to Darius Slayton today. He only had 1 target for 6 yards. What happened to Darius Slayton?
Daniel Jones. I don't know. It's a mess. I mean, they're not getting Evan Ingram the ball downfield that much, and they're struggling to get it downfield to Slayton too. It's just a product of this offense, I would say, at this point.
All right. And with the backfield, Wayne Gallman continued to be the lead running back with Devontae Freeman out. 14 carries, 68 yards, a touchdown. If you are desperate at running back, or if you have Devontae Freeman, I guess you can have start Wayne Gallman. But Alfred Morris and Deion Lewis are still, you know, parts of this run game. And Alfred Morris might have been the best looking running back, but it might have been a revenge game for Alfred Morris. But at the same time, I think he has potential revenge games against half the league. So, maybe keep an eye on that. And then I think the last question that we have to ask anyone who looks at the box score is going to look at it and be like, oh, who's Austin Mack? So either of you guys, who's Austin Mack?
You really put me on the spot there, huh?
It's okay if you don't know either. I mean, if the answer is we don't know who Austin Mack is and he's not relevant, that's fine.
He played at Ohio State. That's about what I got. He's a rookie.
My answer is going to be pass.
Well, that's what Daniel Jones did to him today. As you mentioned, Eric, a lot of competition in this New York offense for not a lot of production. So, you can pass on Austin Mack as Mike has done. And the final morning game or 1 o'clock game for you East Coasters over there. Let's talk about Houston Texans beating the Jacksonville Jaguars 27-25. The Texans are now 2-0 against the Jaguars and 0-6 against literally everyone else. And if that's not sad enough, the Jaguars have now continued their 7-game losing streak. They were 1-0 once upon a time. And this is just quite the slide these two teams have found themselves in. We talked a lot about Jake Luton and DJ Chark and this passing game. Just real quick, reiterate, Eric, what were your thoughts on Luton and Chark?
Yeah, so a great sign for Chark. Really took over the targets in this one with a new quarterback, which is always a question. Luton, I mean, he looked like he belonged. You know, you didn't see him and just think, man, they got to get this guy off the field. So we'll see if defenses expose him. But pretty encouraging overall, and I read some encouraging scouting reports on him during the week. So there might actually be some talent here, even though a lot of people haven't heard of him.
All right, and then, great matchup for the running game on both sides. James Robinson took advantage, 25 carries, 99 yards, and a touchdown. Robinson is a must-start every week. He's plugged in as really the only running back here in Jacksonville doing anything. So keep starting him. For Houston, I think, this is nice. Will Fuller scored a touchdown. Brandon Cook scored a touchdown. Duke Johnson scored a touchdown. That should have been David Johnson, but, as we mentioned, he got hurt. So, I mean, not much has changed for me in terms of their value. Mike, any change in value for these Houston Texans players?
No, I still want to start Will Fuller. I still want to start Brandon Cooks at receiver. That's about it. Deshaun Watson's still obviously startable at quarterback. And then I'm watching Duke Johnson just to see, how it's looking this week in practice and if they're bringing another back in. I expect they will because Duke never gets the backfield on his own. But if he did, that would be exciting. So keep an eye on him, but don't expect him to get the workload.
Any last thoughts on this game before we move on?
No, it sounds good to me on the Texan side. I did miss saying for the Jaguars, keep an eye on James Robinson. It was his first week since week one with less than 3 catches or less than 4 targets. And Chris Thompson had pretty much his same role. So when there's a new quarterback, sometimes this stuff changes up. And Robinson had 2 targets and no catches. So just keep an eye on that. We don't know how Luton likes to target people, but maybe Robinson takes a little drop here.
All right. Let's talk about the 4 o'clock games. These games were a lot more exciting than some of these morning games for sure. All three of these games were really good. Raiders held on to beat the Chargers 31-26. Chargers dropped to 2-6. I don't think this is how they thought this year was going to go at all for them. Raiders now 5-3. And for the Chargers, we talked about this backfield a lot. We talked about Ballage. We talked about Kelly. We talked about Justin Jackson, all of that at the very top of the show under winners and losers. So check that out if you're here to find out what's going on with this Chargers backfield. In the passing game, I mean, same as always, Justin Herbert is good. And Keenan Allen is his number one target. Mike Williams, again, showed that he can have big weeks with Herbert. And Hunter Henry, I mean, he's probably not that exciting at tight end anymore. I mean, how many weeks in a row of it has been of Hunter Henry just kind of being there and being involved?
Yeah, I was talking with some people on our sit start on Reddit this week. He's just not getting much red zone work. He did get a target today, at least. I remember seeing that, but he's not scoring touchdowns and he's not really making big plays. So he's just kind of a floor tight end at this point. I'm not ranking him very high in my rankings going forward, that's for sure.
Okay, and then, I think we can move to the Raiders side of the ball. I don't think anything really changed for the Chargers this week. Am I missing anything on them, guys?
Well, I just would say we have the snap counts in now for the running backs. Justin Jackson only saw 3 snaps. Kelly did lead the way with 43, and Kalen Ballage had 31. So theoretically, Kelly's the lead back, but we've just seen too many other people steal work from him.
Well, and Troy Maine-Pope will probably lead the team in carries next week or something like that. With the Raiders, I think this is really curious. Josh Jacobs has been the workhorse there all season long. And maybe this is a product of what happened last week where he ran the ball over 30 times. Or it might have been exactly 30 times. But Jacobs with 14 carries, 65 yards and a touchdown. And Devontae Booker with 8 carries for 68 yards, also scoring a touchdown. That's definitely the biggest split in workload we've seen all year. If I'm a Josh Jacobs, manager, I'm a little concerned, but, you know, help me out. Do I have any cause to be concerned?
Well, it's just maybe for that true RB1 breakout season we do. Jacobs kind of had a knee thing going on and I think an illness this week too. And he always seems to be dinged up. So I think maybe that's part of it. He had 28 snaps, Booker 13 and Rashard 9. So he's still the lead back. But yeah, they're giving him some breaks and I think just trying to keep him fresh.
Yeah, I'm not too worried here. Jacobs is clearly the most talented. Booker isn't getting many touches at all. It's, as Eric said, just keeping him fresh, keeping him healthy.
Okay, and then Darren Waller scores a touchdown. I think he's right there with Mark Andrews in terms of kind of the best of the not elite tight ends. And then Nelson Agholor scores a touchdown. I mean, he's scored quite a few touchdowns this year. That's pretty much what he does, gets like 3 receptions and scores a touchdown somewhere in there. But, you know, I don't think there's really anyone to be interested in this Raiders passing offense.
Yeah, this was a rough game. Waller had 10 targets, no one else with more than 3. Renfro and Agholor seem to get you a big play each week. Ruggs, no catches, though. So that's a bummer. We were hoping to see him contribute a little more by now.
Yep. Okay, let's go to Dallas. Pittsburgh Steelers are now 8-0. As we said on Wednesday, this now makes it official. Mike Tomlin has been 500 or better every single season he's been with the Steelers, including this one. Cowboys did what the Cowboys do, which is lose games. I thought for a second they had a chance to pull it out, and then the defense remembered they're not very good, and they need to let the Steelers score. So that's what they did. Gary Gilbert, I think, might be the second best quarterback we've had in Dallas so far this year. Are we back on the CD Lamb or Amari Cooper trains? Or I mean, to be honest, I benched Cooper in most leagues I had him, and I just was too concerned. But can we go back to feeling good about starting these guys?
I don't know. Maybe we overreacted a little bit, but I mean, they're talented. Cooper and Lamb. Lamb made some really nice catches, so their talent alone is going to give them some good weeks. But I still expect some. Just kind of disappearing acts from time to time. So I don't know. You're the Garrett Gilbert expert here, so I'll defer to you.
he was the second best quarterback we've had so far this year. Dalton and DiNucci were just horrible. So, we'll see if he can keep it up. I mean, this is against a really good defense, but I think like Cooper and Lamb can be on the start side of the borderline start, as opposed to being on the sit side of the borderline start. I'm not fully buying into them yet. I do want to point out Ezekiel Elliott in PPR league scored 8.9 points today, which would be the highest mark he's had since Dak Prescott went down. So I said this on a lot of those sit start comments, and I said this a lot in the Discord. I don't know how you can feel comfortable starting Ezekiel Elliott right now, the way this offense has looked, but maybe better days are ahead. He had this best game against the Steelers run defense, and if Gilbert can throw the ball, he might have an opportunity. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm at on Zeke.
Yeah, for me, this is a step in the right direction for the Cowboys. As you said, it's still very worrisome for Zeke, and we're not going to see the Dak days of monster yards. Everybody eats. Everybody's happy. but this 4 receptions, 71 yards for Lamb, 5 receptions, 67 yards for Cooper, 7 targets for Lamb, Cooper, and Gallup. That's much better than what we saw last week. It was pretty apocalyptic for this team for a couple weeks. And the defense is still terrible. As you said, they really gave this one away. The Steelers did not want to win this one, and Dallas just somehow found a way. But yeah, this is a step in the right direction for the offense. I would feel better about Lamb and Cooper, not happy about Gallup, not happy about Zeke.
Yeah, I mean, and you might be looking at the Steelers, point totals this week and be a little bit disappointed. I mean, Juju ended up with a good game, 6 for 93 and a touchdown. Deontay Johnson, 6 for 77. Chase Claypool, 8 for 69. I mean, they needed to throw the ball a lot, and so they definitely got the volume and were able to get points. But for a long time, it was not looking good for these guys. And I think, honestly, watching that first half, I really think the Steelers came in and thought, hey, if we could win this game, even if Ben threw the ball left-handed and if James Conner ran backwards 5 yards before each play, just to give the Cowboys a bit of a head start. That was kind of the vibe that they had coming into this game. And then they realized that they actually had to try. And so when they tried, like in the 2 minute drill at the end of the first half, and then in the fourth quarter, when they were like, oh, hey, we're running out of time, we actually need to score the ball, they had no problem carving up this Dallas defense. So I wouldn't feel at all concerned about their passing attack moving forward. I am a bit concerned that James Conner only had 22 yards on 9 carries. I don't know why they weren't able to run as well on the Cowboys as other teams have, but I think if you have Conner, you're still, you know, firing him up every week.
Yeah, I think I was a little more concerned. I mean, I know the Steelers have laid some eggs on the road before with Roethlisberger at quarterback, so it's nothing that out of the ordinary, but I don't know. It was a lot of dink and dunk stuff, and Roethlisberger got hit and hurt his knee. He only missed a series, but he was hobbling around a little bit. It's kind of just a reminder that he's a bad hit away from, you know, putting Mason Rudolph back out there, which we don't want. So I don't know. There was a little bit of concern here. I don't know if he is the quarterback that we remember from 2 years ago getting the ball downfield. But against most teams, I think this offense will keep it moving. Plenty of PPR points anyway. It was a little bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, I mean, that series that he missed, he really wouldn't even have missed the series if CeeDee Lamb didn't fumble the ball right into Minka Fitzpatrick's hands.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why Mason Rudolph was out there, and Mason Rudolph looked terrible. So definitely if Rudolph is under center at any point this season, I have no interest in anyone in the Steelers passing game. Let's finish up with might have been the game of the week, to be perfectly honest. This Miami Arizona game was fantastic. I got to say, it's really fun to watch these two quarterbacks. They kind of feel like carbon copies, because I think, you know, Tua is best case for Tua is what Kyler Murray is doing right now. And it's been pretty fantastic to watch. What did you guys see from this game?
Well, I wouldn't say that Tua has the rushing upside, but he's definitely mobile and made some plays with his legs. Tua looked super competent. There were a few scrambles that worked out for him. It seemed a little fortunate, but in just his second start, it was really encouraging. And it looks like he can run an offense that'll support some fantasy weapons. So he seems to make good decisions. He's not rattled, kind of all the things we expected with Tua. So, and then Kyler Murray is just insane when he's running the ball. They had a couple short yardage plays that they didn't let him run, and I was very confused why they did that, because he had 11 carries for 106 yards. So he's unstoppable when he's running the ball. And I mentioned in our Discord, I'm a little surprised that Chase Edmonds and the rushing game can't benefit more from Kyler Murray's rushing ability. It just hasn't really opened up anything in the running game. It's just all Kyler for the most part. So I kind of expect it to happen, but we're, you know, halfway through the season and it hasn't happened quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that typically you see when you have a mobile quarterback. It kind of really opens up lanes for running backs. And they gave Chase Edmonds plenty of opportunities to run the ball, and he didn't go very far. 25 carries, 70 yards. So not the game we were expecting him to have. But I think this Miami defense is a lot better than we've kind of been expecting and giving them credit for. You know, in the passing game, Christian Kirk led the way with 5 receptions and 8 targets. Kirk has to be for real at this point, right? I mean, Mike, are you buying into Christian Kirk and starting him anywhere you can?
Yeah, I'm buying back into Christian Kirk. He was somebody I loved before the season, and as we saw early on, he just wasn't there. These last 3 games, though, he's been huge. I'd still like to see the target numbers jump up a bit. It's been a lot of touchdowns lately. But this was targets, this was yards, this was receptions and a touchdown. Yeah, it's still weird to see DeAndre Hopkins so quiet. I mean, three targets, 3 receptions. But I'm buying back in on Kirk. I think the offense can easily support 2 guys, and Kirk should be that number 2 here.
And on the Miami side of the ball, I was really encouraged with what I saw today from Devontae Parker. I remember last week, Eric, we talked about, you know, with Tua under center, what were we going to see from this offense? Parker was hardly involved. Was it because of injury? Was it because they were beating the Rams by so much? Was it both? But, you know, led the team in targets with 7, 6 receptions, 64 yards. So, you know, for all the people out there of Devontae Parker, can they feel, you know, confident again in starting him with Tua under center?
Yeah, this is definitely a nice floor. And Preston Williams going down with injury, you know, that just opens up more work. So offense seems to be well designed and they're getting people open, and Tua pretty good at running it so far. So, yeah, I think we're back on Parker as a most week starter.
Okay, and we have to talk about this. I don't want to, but we have to. The Miami running game. If Matt Breida is out, and Gaskin is out for at least two more weeks as he was placed on IR, if Matt Breida continues to be out, you know, Jordan Howard today had a Jordan Howard game, you know, 1.9 yards per carry and scored a touchdown, which I think is the best yards per carry he's had at any point this season somehow. You know, is he the guy, if you need someone, is he the guy you're starting because he can score the touchdown, or are we interested in Salvon Ahmed, who had 38 carries on, or 38 yards on seven carries?
I'm actually more interested in Salvon Ahmed, to be perfectly honest. He was an undrafted rookie. San Francisco drafted him, so he was on my radar because they know what they're doing with running backs, especially undrafted ones. I mean, we profiled him preseason for the combine. Like, he was a halfway decent prospect, and he looked way better than Jordan Howard. So we know Howard's going to have the touchdown chances, but Ahmed led the backfield in snaps too. He had 28, Howard had 21, and Laird had 12. So I would be more interested in Ahmed personally. I think we know what's there with Howard.
Yeah, I think I agree. Asking about excitement for Jordan Howard's like asking about excitement for Frank Gore. Howard just got there 10 years earlier in his career.
Yeah. So I guess we're at this point, we're praying for Matt Breida to be healthy. Is that kind of where we're at on this Dolphins running game?
Or Gaskin.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially Gaskin.
Yeah. Well, we have two more weeks of that, so you might be praying a long time. Halftime, Sunday Night Football, and Saints are up 31-0. So that's exactly what we were all expecting. You know, from this game, you know, I think we thought that the Bucs would make it a little bit more competitive. But they still have a whole nother half to try and, I don't know, make it a closer game. But I just want to point out Antonio Brown, 4 targets, 2 receptions, 16 yards. So Mr. Big Chest is back.
It was also, I don't know if you guys caught it, Jarrett Cook had a fumble right at the goal line. So the Saints almost had another touchdown that got turned out.
Well, hey, no one scores 38 points in the first half on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, okay? This is a good defense, gosh darn it. All right, guys. Well, hey, a lot of weird things happened in Week 9, and you know, this NFL season, anything can happen at any point. So, you know, every week, you know, Eric and Mike and I are going to be here talking about it all. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this show. Like, subscribe, rate, leave a review, whatever you do with podcasts. And we look forward to seeing you guys next week.